presented by the American Petroleum Institute.
Hey, good morning. I'm Playbook co-author Rachel Bade. It's Tuesday, June 25th, and here's what's driving the day. WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange has struck a plea deal with the U.S. government. He is expected to return free to his native Australia after getting credit for 5 years he spent in prison in the U.K. In return, he's going to be pleading guilty to conspiring to obtain and disseminate classified information. Should the House Sergeant at Arms arrest Attorney General Merrick Garland? If that question sounds a bit ridiculous, well, you haven't been following the news in the House over the past 24 hours. Congresswoman Ana Paulina Luna, a Republican from Florida, plans to force a vote on the so-called inherent contempt tool, all because Merrick Garland is refusing to hand over special counsel Robert Hur's tapes of the Biden interviews. Now, this is a centuries-old tool that hasn't been used in, well, forever, but yes, technically, it does allow the sergeant-at-arms to arrest people who ignore subpoenas. But you can expect the effort to die. With the Rules Committee expecting to tee up a trio of spending bills later today, the White House yesterday issued veto threats on all three: defense, homeland security, and state foreign ops. Why? Well, because Republicans are marking up these bills below the agreement Kevin McCarthy made with the White House last year. If this feels like deja vu to you, well, we don't blame you at all. McCarthy did the same thing, reneging on his agreement last year and trying to cut spending even lower, only to return to the original agreement, which is what we expect Speaker Johnson to do eventually. It's primary day in Colorado, Utah, and New York, and as promised in yesterday's playbook, where we fleshed out the dynamics of the previous two states, we are going to focus this morning on the Empire State and their Democratic bloodbath in particular. Here to help me break it all down is my colleague and our co-author of the New York playbook, Emily Ngo. Good morning, Emily.
Hi, Rachel. Thanks for having me. Good morning.
So I'm just going to cut to the chase here. Is Jamal Bowman a dead man walking at this point?
I never want to predict races before they actually happen, but it is not looking good for him. The only public poll that we've seen in this very competitive primary showed him 17 points down on his challenger, George Latimer. And that is just a stunning deficit for an incumbent, especially.
This race is so interesting for a number of reasons, and I want to flesh out a few of those. But before I get into those, we know obviously a lot about Jamal Bowman, and not just because, you know, he pulled the fire alarm here on Capitol Hill and set people scrambling, but also he's a powerful member of the squad. I want to know more about George Latimer. Just give us a quick rundown of who this guy is that is taking him on.
He has by no means the same national name recognition that Jamal Bowman does. But if you walk around Westchester County, you know who George Latimer is. He serves as the county executive. That's a local office, but he's all over that part of the district. And even before that, he was in some form of state or local elected office for about 35 years. And he's not only just been a politician for half his life, he's one of those politicians who's out there talking with everyone who views government and politics as a hobby. He's helped in this race, of course, and we'll talk about that more, I know, by AIPAC money, but that has freed him up on the campaign trail to go out and talk to commuters every morning and focus really on glad handing and meet and greets versus fundraising.
And obviously that's a big difference. At least Bowman's critics attack him and say that he's not super tied in with the district, that he just wants to grandstand. He wants to sort of be the one in the limelight with AOC. So this guy seems to be like the workhorse, or at least that's what Bowman's critics are saying, right? The workhorse behind the scenes kind of thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
So let's talk about a few dynamics here. So this race is sort of this perfect encapsulation of the war going on in the Democratic Party over how to handle this matter of the bloodshed in Gaza, and particularly how to address Israel in the Democratic Party. That's been the biggest issue in this race. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. Especially from a national vantage point, there is the money that AIPAC pro-Israel lobbying efforts are spending on behalf of Latimer. There's the fact that Latimer won't criticize even Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, despite Chuck Schumer and Joe Biden going there. And there's the fact that Bowman is so outspoken and vocal about what he says are human rights abuses of Palestinians in Gaza, his criticism of U.S. funding of the war in Gaza and the Israeli offensive in Gaza. So this primary really is a litmus test of where Democratic sentiment is on the war, especially this many months out from the October 7th attack by Hamas on Israel.
Do you think that Bowman would be in this much trouble if he hadn't gone so far? And that's why we're seeing this backlash here, that maybe there was a safer territory where he could have, you know, sounded like a lot of other progressives, but, you know, not lost endorsements from, he lost the endorsement of J Street. It's almost like, I don't know, I'm just curious if he hadn't gone that far, you think he would be in trouble right now at all?
If the question is whether he went too far, he may have gone too far for this district, which is heavily Jewish, which trends much more politically moderate than, you know, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's district a little bit to the south, which is the Bronx and Queens. He is Bronx and Westchester. So it's really his views and how vocal he's been about it. And he's been very principled on it and very consistent. But yes, he said many things that a lot of voters and supporters of Latimer have been able to pull apart and present as evidence, they say, of his anti-Semitism. And he's already been pushing back on that. He says, including on The View recently, that criticism of a state is not criticism of a people.
Emily, I've already kept you too long, but I've got to ask, what else are you going to be watching in these Democratic primaries today?
So there are two more House Democratic primaries in New York State that actually could be a lot closer than the Jamal Bowman, George Latimer race. And one of them is upstate in the Syracuse area. And it's two Democrats, Sarah Cleet Hood and Brian Mannion, competing for the chance to run up against Brandon Williams, who could be the most vulnerable House Republican in the country this year. So really, whoever wins that Democratic primary could go on, if they play their cards right, if they run the race right, to defeat a Republican. The other one is on Eastern Long Island. That's between former CNN anchor John Avlon and someone who's run before. Yes, an organic chemist, actually, named Nancy Goroff. And that could be tight, too. She's been spending a lot of her own money, going negative in her attacks, but he's really been cleaning up on the local Democratic official endorsements. So we'll see how that one plays out, because he's someone who is portrayed by Goroff as parachuting into the Hamptons and running from a second home where she has closer community ties. But he's clearly the preferred candidate of the Democratic establishment, because he has so many endorsements, Democratic committees, other members of Congress from New York, even some of the candidates who had run in that race previously.
Everybody read Emily Ngo today. She's going to have all the best analysis. So thanks for joining us, Emily.
Happy primary day.
And for the rest of your schedule today, the House obviously is in. The Senate is not. And President Biden remains at Camp David today, where he's preparing for Thursday's big debate. The only thing on his formal schedule is receiving the daily briefing and getting those one-liners down to perfection. I'm Rachel Bade. Thanks for listening.
For nearly 4 years, the American people have faced the pain of high inflation and global conflict. Now, more than ever, it's time to end political gamesmanship and implement policies that help benefit Americans. Let's work together on solutions that help address the consequences of inflation and secure our energy future. Visit lightsonenergy.com/energyleadership to learn more.